Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio, and I love all things tech. It is time for a classic episode. This episode is called How Ad Blockers Work, and it originally published on March 31st, 2014. And I've got some things to say about ad blockers. I'll save it for the end, and it's likely going to be repeated in the actual episode, which, you know, full disclosure, I have not gone back and listened to. So it may very well be that everything I say is repetitive, but that way I'll just throw it at the end. And if you hear stuff I've already said, you know, you just stop it. Anyway, let's go back and listen to this classic episode.
Before we get started on this, we'll go ahead and say that, you know, there are the advertisers who make ads are not necessarily trying to make them to annoy you. That would actually be counterproductive to what the ad is supposed to do.
I would argue that some ad theory states that if you annoy an audience enough to get their attention, then that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But we're getting into sticky territory there.
And we'll cover all of that as we go along. But if you wanted to hear a really simple story about how AdBlock came to be, bad news, everyone. As it turns out, AdBlock has got an incredibly complex story because it is one of those things where it's kind of like a hydra, you know, eventually one head would get cut off and two other heads would spring up, and those two heads would each be doing kind of what the first head did, but they're doing it in a different way and they're not really communicating with each other.
And when they do communicate with each other, they're fighting a little bit.
Yeah, it's one of those that it's not so simple as to say like, this one piece of software, now it's version 2, now it's version 3. You actually have lots of forking going on. It's more like Windows, how Windows would occasionally fork into different groups, and you're like, well, I used to be able to explain the history of Windows, but now not so much. But you can actually trace it back to a single point, a historical moment when the very first version of AdBlock came out, and it originally came out for the Firefox web browser.
Mm-hmm. This was a browser extension. Firefox being open source, it allows people to, developers, well, I mean, developers are people. I didn't mean to imply that they're not.
Yeah.
It allows you to create extensions or add-ons for the browser in order to change or improve or...
Yeah, to increase its functionality,
sure.
Right? Yeah, because there's some things that a browser can do. And then occasionally the web develops in such a way where there's some really awesome stuff you could do if the browser just supported it, and the extensions kind of allow you to create that ability.
Right. And so according to one Latimer Pallant, a Danish programmer by the name of Henrik Osteth Sarsen.
Yep.
I think I got that right.
Yeah. Well,
also.
Definitely better than I could have.
Huh. Who developed this extension? I don't remember now if we said already in 2002.
No, we did not. Yeah. Oh, by the way, the reason why we said we don't know already is because you guys do not get treated to the fact that our building started to vibrate because of something going on somewhere inside this building. And we figured you'd rather be, you know, saved that experience. But
that, yeah, 3-minute break in which we went, what is that?
Yeah. But in 2002, in fact, he did begin development on this. This was formerly the AdBlock extension. And at that point, it was spelled AdBlock. Now, the reason I say little b is because the other versions we'll talk about differentiate themselves with capitalization as well as adding other words. But this is the first one. Now, this one could block images, which at the time was pretty much the main form of web advertising. It wasn't the only one, but it was the main one.
Right.
So things like banner ads that were at the top or the ones that are along the side of the column or even just inserted directly as like a picture inside an article. That's the kind of stuff this would block.
Sure. And so if you found an image that you didn't like, probably because it was an ad, you could add that that image's URL to a list of blocked images.
Right. And it would actually go all the way back to where the source of that image came from and then start blocking other images from that source. Because, of course, if there's one advertiser that happens to run a lot of different campaigns, and back in those early days of the web, there were a few that had lots and lots of clients,
mm-hmm.
You could essentially blanket block a whole list of advertisements.
Swath of, yeah. Right. It was pretty effective at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. For images anyway, they did have some downsides. One of the downsides was that it did not actually prevent the web page from loading the image. In fact, the earliest version, which they called 0.3. I assume that versions 0.1 and 0.2 were earlier development.
Were beta and alpha, sure.
Yeah, yeah, never were released. But this 0.3 one, it did not prevent the images from loading at all. It would, in fact, first load the entire web page, images and all.
And then block those ads.
Right. Now, this was an important deal. Like, people really wanted to have it blocked, not just, you know, from view, but blocked, period, so it wouldn't download. Not just because people thought, or at least some people thought, that advertising was really intrusive and it decreased their enjoyment of the surfing experience.
Visually annoying, but also was using up precious memory and data
bandwidth.
Usage, bandwidth.
Yeah, yeah. So it would take you extra time to download a web page because it had to download all of those assets, including the ads. And if you could turn those ads off, then the web pages would load faster. You know, this is the era of dial-up. You know, I remember that era well.
Me too.
Not happily, but I do remember it well.
Aw, I kind of have fond memories of it.
Not at all.
No.
Huh. Yeah, you know, when someone would say, hey, you need to go and look, there's this funny picture, and you click on it, and then you...
And 6 minutes later,
yes, exactly.
After you go and make yourself a cup of coffee.
Right, you're like, well, you know, I'm just going to go wander off for a bit. But anyway, so this AdBlock version was limited in its use, but it had potential. And so the next version of AdBlock came along from someone else because Sorensen was interested in creating this tool, but not necessarily interested in continually updating it and giving it more features. It was kind of a one-off for Sorensen.
Sure.
So we then have a mysterious figure.
So someone by the handle of Rue, whose name I'm still not sure of.
Yeah, Rue, R-U-E, as in that spelling, not R-O-O. But Rue created AdBlock 0.4, and went in a completely different way, used XML binding language, also known as XBL. Now, that's a web markup language. So HTML is hypertext markup language. This is similar, except instead of it telling specifically like a browser how to display things, it's more about defining specific behaviors of elements that would be displayed in a web page. So it's all about letting a program know what any particular element is supposed to be able to do so that the computer does that thing when you make the command. So an easy example is a scroll bar. Mm-hmm. If you were to put a scroll bar within the context of a web page itself, you know, this isn't the browser's scroll bar, but something that's inside the web page, then you might use XBL to define those behaviors. So you say when the user drags the scroll bar, this is the thing that's supposed to happen. Now, in this case, they were using XBL to sort of just prevent, again, these ads from displaying.
But it could prevent more than just images, because it was working within the code of the browser. It could also prevent Flash and Java objects.
Right. And this was another big advance as far as ad blocking was concerned, because anyone who has been using the web for a while knows ads that are just pictures that appear on the top or the side or within a context of an article or something. That's just a small slice of the types of web advertising we've seen out there. There are a lot of things that have float over ads, float under ads, autoplay ads, which, boy, are those my favorite. I definitely feel some sympathy here for folks who really get tired of ads that have, you know, a negative impact on your user experience.
If they're intrusive, absolutely.
I mean, if I go to a website where there's some sort of audio component that I want to listen to, and because I move my cursor and it goes over a ad panel and then some advertising audio starts playing at the same time, that's clearly not an enjoyable experience.
I mean, sure.
You know, can't really get around that. But anyway, yeah, this meant that it was more useful than the 0.3 version of AdBlock. But it should be said that because it was using a different approach, while it was called AdBlock 0.4, it wasn't necessarily a direct descendant of AdBlock 0.3. And this is where we already have some confusion, right?
Right. Further confusion would happen because Latimer Pallant, who we mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. was basically unaware of this update going out mm-hmm. and created his own 0.4.
Right. So you have Latimer saying, okay, I know that this thing that Sorensen did was useful, but it was very limited. I want to make my own approach and try and create a more versatile, useful platform to block this sort of intrusive advertising, and started working on it and then was prepared to release it and then discovered through some, I have no idea what the tone was. From the basis of the history that Pallant wrote, I would like to imagine that Rue was a little miffed. Great was the miffage thereof. And that Latimer found out that he couldn't release it as a 0.4 because there was already a 0.4. So now comes the discussion of whether or not Latimer's work should be incorporated into a 0.5 version. So keep in mind that while this is all going on, Firefox itself is continuing to slowly release updates, which necessitates that browser extensions be updated as well, because
not to work with the new code.
Exactly.
Sure.
Yeah. So this was not, you know, just an academic discussion of should this go forward or not. It needed to keep developing for it to be useful. So his approach was to look at content policies to both predict and block ads, which ended up being an advance over the previous versions because it was finally allowing the user to have these ads blocked before the page even loaded.
Right.
So now we get into that era where things can be sped up because you don't need to load all the assets. He also had this discussion with Rue about what needs to be done. They decided to kind of collaborate, but according to Pallant's history, he got very frustrated that Rue would kind of piecemeal pick the bits that Latimer had created and then ignore everything else. And Latimer felt that a lot of the things he had contributed were being ignored, and that some of the things he had made were being used in ways he had not intended. There was one in particular where he said users were complaining about this particular interface. And the problem was, I had never intended users to be activating this interface. It wasn't meant for
users. Yeah.
But now it's part of what, because I'm not the one who, I don't own Adblock.
I'm not implementing these changes myself. And,
yeah.
Right.
So that became kind of a sore subject. So you move forward to 2005 and no one had really worked on Adblock.
Yeah, there was still some of that XBL stuff involved. And some of Latimer's approaches
were in there. Yeah, it was kind of a mishmash. It was like a Frankenstein's monster version of what each person, like Rue and Latimer, had both had in mind.
Mm-hmm. But out of this grew what was going to be called Adblock Plus.
Yeah, this is when a fellow named Michael McDonald, who used the handle MCM, came along. And he created a new version, going back to 0.3 as sort of the point of inspiration, with enhanced features. He did call it Adblock Plus. And at this point, one of the things that was added was this ability for users to whitelist certain file sources so that they would still get those shown to them.
Right. Whitelisting being the opposite of blacklisting.
Yeah.
Certifying that a certain thing or person or entity is acceptable.
Exactly. So instead of just having a giant X over any advertising, this would allow you to be more selective. So you could say, no, I want to see these particular types of ads.
These ads are okay.
Yeah. So Latimer and Rue continued their discussion about what should be Adblock. And Latimer even went so far as to offer to rewrite the 0.5 version of Adblock and then add in the new features, as well as try and tweak some of the stuff that he felt was clunky or not user-friendly. But there was more disagreement between Rue and Latimer. And then eventually Latimer contacted McDonald, MCM.
About Adblock Plus.
Yeah, and MCM said, you know, you can come on over. You can come on over here, because I don't really want to forever be developing this extension. I just, like, you know, Sorensen did years ago. He, you know, Sorensen said, no, I made this thing, but I don't want to have to keep making it.
Uh-huh. And especially at the time, Firefox was going through this kind of like update every other day sort of process.
It was really rapid. Yes.
Yeah.
So McDonald said, you know, I really don't have the time and effort to be the steward of this extension. So
Latimer, if you want to take it,
yeah,
take it.
And Latimer said, yeah, okay, fine. So in January 2006, they launched Adblock Plus 0.6. So again, the versions are starting to get a little confusing, because this Adblock Plus was not directly connected to Adblock. It existed as its own thing at the same time.
Right.
So we have two different versions going on, two different approaches, and two different communities of users. So then Palant decides he'll keep on working on Adblock Plus, and he wanted to try, you know, it's not that he hated the old Adblock. He actually tried several times to address issues, because as the extension got older and less relevant, it also became clear that there were some security vulnerabilities.
Ah, mm-hmm.
And so he said, listen, guys, I found these vulnerabilities. You really should patch them. You need to update Adblock so that this doesn't remain a vulnerability for users. And then it got to a point where it's like, really? I mean, I can help do this if you need to. But it was kind of one of those things where Adblock just sort of began to die out at that point. And Adblock Plus was the... It's wrong to say the winner, because it wasn't like it was a real battle, but it's the survivor of the two.
Yeah, yeah. I was about to say, this sounds like internet Darwinism.
Yeah, yeah, it kind of is. So then you get into, I got really snarky with this note, y'all, but I'm going to go ahead and include it because Schadenfreude. No, in 2007, PC World, the magazine, named Adblock Plus one of the 100 best products of 2007. The reason why I felt the need to include this is because today PC World is online only. It ended its print format in 2013, and now it depends very heavily on the online format. You know, the one that is supported.
Uses ads.
Yeah. So Wah, wah.
I did want to mention, though, that it's certainly not the only award that Adblock Plus has won. Yeah. For example, it also nabbed Best Firefox Extension from Linux Magazine in 2010, which, by the way, you can still get in print. Hmm. So bully for them.
How about that? So then we move up to December 8th, 2009. And boy, we just got to the point where we narrowed it down. Adblock Plus was the only player in the game. It was going to be so much easier to talk about this for the rest of this podcast.
And then Google made an announcement, which led to a whole bunch more mess happening.
Well, we have more to say about ad blockers, but first, hey, what do you know? We have some ads. We'll be right back.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Okay, so December 8th, 2009, and this is the first time where we can actually put a specific date on one of these things. You know, again, developers don't necessarily write down stuff for historical records.
Right.
Which, guys, you gotta start doing that.
Yeah, seriously, everyone get on that. Everyone is on that at this point because of the popularity of blogging and microblogging, but at any rate.
Right. This is when Michael Gundlach developed his own ad blocker called
Adblock. Yeah. With a capital B this time.
Right, that makes it totally different.
Obviously.
It's spelled the same way as the original ad block, except that the B is capitalized, like you said.
Look, it's the internet. Things can be case sensitive.
I just think that it's funny that you already have a product called Adblock Plus, so clearly what you want to come out with is one called Adblock. But, you know, again, these are open source approaches. It's not like these different developers are all getting into it in order to make buku's amount of money. It's something that they felt was necessary to extend its functionality.
It's a passion thing, absolutely.
So this is totally separate from the original Adblock and also Adblock Plus. And originally, this was an extension for Google Chrome. And in fact, the reason why I said December 8th, 2009 is that's also the very first day that Google allowed extensions in Chrome.
Only in the beta version of Chrome, actually, at the time, it would roll out extensions for Chrome as a whole a couple months later. But, you know, they made this announcement and Gunlash checked to see whether there was already an ad blocker for Chrome. And specifically AdBlock Plus for Chrome, because he really liked AdBlock Plus. It was his favorite Firefox extension. And he saw that there wasn't and started coding one, like, on the spot.
Yep. And so, and now these days, you can actually get it for multiple browsers, not just Google Chrome. It also, there's a version for Safari and one for Opera. AdBlock Plus, by the way, also available on multiple browsers, including Chrome, Safari, as well as Internet Explorer and, of course, Firefox, where it got started.
Right.
So now we're covering pretty much all the bases. And some of these, you know, you're limited on choice. Like if you're using Opera, hello? No, I mean, I know that the Opera fans out there are big, passionate fans. They love that browser. I think there might be three of you. But hey, if you're one of those three, write us and tell us why Opera is the best, because I would love to hear.
Do it.
I've used it a couple of times and that's all I know about it. So at any rate, you had AdBlock going under version numbers like 2.0 being the first one that's being released for actual use. So we're no longer at the 0. whatever for AdBlock. It's on a totally different path. Again, it's not really connected to those other ones, other than the fact that the end result is it blocks ads.
Right.
Right. It's supposed to do the same thing.
It was based on the same concept.
Exactly.
But it was written from an entirely separate bit of code.
Exactly. So one of my favorite stories about the AdBlock extension is what happened on April Fool's Day, 2012.
Right.
So at this day, the developer decided to do something playful by tweaking the code a little bit. So instead of just blocking ads so that you don't see them, it replaced ads with the internet's favorite thing.
Lolcats. So it became cat block for a day.
And in fact, it got so popular that, and people loved it so much that they went ahead and added cat block as an optional add-on
A paid add-on.
Yeah, you could subscribe and get cat block if you wanted everything to permanently, well, everything, all the ads to permanently be switched over to cats. Not
the entire internet.
Not just a cat browser, although someone's got to have done that, I'm sure, right?
I'm positive.
Anyway, yeah so interesting.
Yeah. So features of Gunlash's ad block are that it can block resources in Google Chrome so that the elements won't even load in the browser, right? And that includes not just pictures, but also Flash elements. It can block ads and videos. Like if YouTube plays an ad before a video, it can just wipe that from creation.
Right. Yep. So at least as far as you're concerned. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The current version, I believe, is available in more than 30 languages.
Yep. It's got international capabilities built right into it.
Also, a note of interest, in 2013, Gunlock launched a successful crowdfunded campaign to, and follow me closely here, kids, create ads for AdBlock so that AdBlock can block more ads.
I'm pretty sure you're talking about Bob Loblaw's Loblog. That's what it sounded like to me.
The campaign was to advertise his service, AdBlock, because not that many people use it. I mean, I think that as of the campaign, he was saying that only 3 in 10 internet users had any kind of ad blocking software at all. And so he thought that, you know, more people need to know about this
thing.
So
he thought it was an awareness problem.
Right. Yeah. And that, you know, if people knew. So he launched this campaign and they made enough money to like put up a billboard in Times Square.
Wait.
Yeah. So yeah, they took it analog.
An ad blocking company paid for an advertisement in what is one of the world's most well-known advertising meccas,
in meat space where no one can block it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. My brain is hurting right now.
It's beautiful.
Well, anyway, if you're wondering, hey, what happened to AdBlock Plus? It kept on keeping on.
Yeah, in 2010, it would receive an anonymous donation that was generous enough to allow Latimer to quit his day job and work full time on the project for two entire years.
Wow.
Yeah. He during that time expanded it for use with all of the browsers that we were talking about a moment ago.
Oh, and also Firefox Mobile and Android. I didn't even mention the mobile operating system.
Right, right. And then in 2011 would incorporate what became a very controversial feature, developer-led whitelisting.
Yeah, so, you know, the earlier whitelisting we were talking about was about users defining, okay, I want to see this particular content.
Right, every personal user using this ad-blocking software.
This is on the developer side. This is before it ever gets to the user. And the idea was that, I mean, the philosophy was kind of interesting to me. The premise is that people want ad block because they don't want annoying, intrusive ads. However, a lot of people still want to be able to support the sites that they go to, and they realize that those sites depend
on ad revenue.
Exactly. So in order to make sure they are not denying these different sites that ad revenue, that they are allowing, they're participating in this kind of marketplace where we can have people paid for the work that they're doing and other people can enjoy that work, AdBlock Plus took it kind of upon itself to define what a good ad is versus not a good ad.
Yeah, the whole thing grew out of a partnership between Latimer and a person by the name of Till Fida, who's an online marketer who agreed that lots of online ads are really terrible. But he didn't want to see the revenue from online ads dry up entirely.
Yeah, so it's kind of an idea that ads that follow a certain set of rules are okay.
Right. If they're not preventing you from accessing the content that you went to that page to read, or auto playing sound, which is terrible all the time, or video, or otherwise just gumming up the works in such an annoying way that you want to block that thing.
Yeah. In fact, ideally, according to this, it has very strict size restrictions that, you know, ads have to be a certain size and write all that down.
Mm-hmm.
But they ideally are text only, which advertisers do not care for. It's not as eye-catching as something like
as
an
a picture,
image.
Of
yeah.
course.
So, but according to the whitelisting approach, it's supposed to be text only, none of that autoplay stuff, whether it's sound or video. It's supposed to be, like you said, it's supposed to be unobtrusive, so it's not supposed to cover up things. You can't have like a scrolling.
Something swoop in or scroll in or
float
shadow
over,
box.
Or reform all the words to spell out this product is awesome. You know, it's not supposed to do any of that kind of stuff. And that if you played by those rules and if you filled out some forms and stuff, you could work with AdBlock
Plus.
You could
apply to get onto this whitelisted program.
So like a company that would provide advertising, because, you know, the companies that you see advertising online, they're usually not the ones that are handling the actual ads.
Sure.
It's usually an ad agency. There are some companies that have their own ad departments, but a lot of them will go to a third party. So if these third parties partner with AdBlock Plus and create ads in this way, those ads would, in theory, not be automatically blocked by the ad blocker. However, if as a user you wanted to still say, I don't want to see any ads, I don't care about the revenue thing, I don't care, all I want is all the ads
an
gone.
An ad-free existence.
Mm-hmm. You could actually turn that option off so that it was automatically on by default, but you could turn it off in the settings and block all ads, whether they are on the quote unquote good ad list or not. Also, it was kind of a honor system approach. It still is kind of an honor system approach because AdBlock Plus doesn't have an automated way to make sure that the ads that are submitted, in fact, follow those criteria.
Right. Once a company gets whitelisted, all of their ads are whitelisted, and it's up to the developers and also to the users of the program to pick out ads that they still find offensive and submit a report about them.
Right. So if, as a user, you see something on a web page and you think, wait, that doesn't fit the criteria, and I've totally got AdBlocker Plus on and it should be blocking all this stuff, you can report the ad. And then AdBlock Plus could take action and say, hey, guys, this isn't following the rules that we set.
Of course, there was still pushback from users about this who said that, you know, first of all, they didn't agree with a group of developers making this choice for them of what was and wasn't acceptable. And second of all, that there was a potential that Adblock Plus was getting paid to serve ads to them.
Yeah, there was a blogger named Sasha Pallenberg who first said that Adblock Plus was an advertising mafia, that this put them in charge. Like, they were the ones who could say what ads are showing on the web and which ones aren't, effectively, at least to the audience that uses Adblock Plus. And then someone who has not been named, as far as I can tell, an anonymous person, alleged that the developers of Adblock Plus had demanded a share of ad revenue in order to whitelist ads from his or her site. We don't know who this person is. We don't know their gender or anything. But according to this one person who presumably works for an advertising company, Adblock Plus was saying, okay, well, if you share a third of your money that you make from these ads, then you can totally be on the list. Not everyone who applies to get on the list makes it, right?
Most people don't. And Adblock Plus has said a lot about this issue online and in blogs and in interviews. They published a clarifying piece in October 2013 stating that it rejects over half of its applicants based on unacceptable ad practices right out the door. Mm-hmm. And that overall it only has accepted about 9.5% of its applicants to the program.
Yeah. Meanwhile, over at Adblock, you have the founder saying, hey, I'm sure if I had an option there saying, show me ads that don't suck, those are his words, that my users would opt in, but it doesn't actually have that functionality. This would become so controversial that Adblock Plus actually ended up not just among advertisers. Clearly, it's controversial to them, but also to users. Users who said, hey, I don't want this to be on by default. I don't want to have to go into my settings and change it. They ended up forking Adblock Plus because it couldn't get more confusing, right? And created Adblock Edge, which doesn't have any of the whitelisting features. It's essentially, this is just going to block everything, unless you manually go in and tell it not to.
Right. And a brief point going back to that monetary issue, in that company blog from Adblock Plus, basically they said that less than 10% of the applications that they've advanced to the final stages were submitted with some kind of monetary benefit to Adblock Plus.
So some were submitted with monetary benefit.
Yes.
That just raises more questions, really. I don't know that I would call that so clarifying anymore. I think there needs to be a clarification of the clarifying statement.
After this next set of ads, I promise we'll block more until we need to run more ads. Take it away, ads.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
This is beyond just the issue of I don't want to see ads or I find this intrusive. There are other considerations that are legitimate that people have, because today, the way the web works, there's a lot of different ways to kind of gather information about users, even in ways that don't necessarily name who you are. But if there's enough of your behavior there, they can totally tell who you are.
They can, and they can certainly track you, anonymous user number, you know, X,
right,
online as much as they want to. And people do continually. And a lot of that tracking software is packaged along with ad serving software.
Right.
So you know, and these are our modern times of big data. It's kind of an issue. As of March 12th, 2014, Adblock Plus claimed to have the capacity to block 8,600 different trackers, you know, different cookies and scripts and all that other stuff that runs in the background of sites that you visit, collecting continual information about you and your activities and your habits to either use or to sell to other companies, you know, companies that are sifting through it for whatever potentially nefarious purposes they choose to, yeah, or just other advertisers.
Right. It may not be so much nefarious, but it could just mean that you're going to get yet more ads.
Right, right. And those weird, creepy ads that show that they know what you've been looking at on Amazon.com.
Right, right. Like when you go to Facebook and you notice that all the ads on Facebook somehow match things that you had just been browsing on a totally different site.
What really confuses me is when they serve me ads of something that I just purchased, because I'm like, I did like that thing.
Yeah,
I already bought it.
I bought the thing that you told me to. I'm not going to buy it again.
I'm not going to click there.
Yeah.
That's confusing.
What confuses me is when I get the ones for enormous muscles, because y'all, I don't know if you've seen me recently, but
you're basically already human perfection.
I know,
so I'm not
really.
Sure.
I mean, like, you know, I don't so much have a six pack as I have a raging kegger. That's what I've got going on. But anyway, so to get down to the side that we're on, so we're, Lauren and I, obviously, we both work for a company that's a web-based company. We get, you know, there are ads that run on HowStuffWorks.com.
Absolutely.
And so
we run ads in our podcast.
Yep.
It's a different kind of thing,
yeah,
certainly.
But still, that's one of the main ways we generate revenue.
Yeah, that is what allows us to have jobs.
Right. So if everyone were to block it, and it got to a point where advertisers said, well, this isn't working because now we can no longer make any money. Like, essentially, if you pull the rug out from underneath that entire industry, it forces everyone to have to rethink, how do I make money? Because if I can't make money, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to go do something else where I can make money.
Sure. So, you know, are you going to put your content behind paywalls of various tiers, or are you going to rely on donations or merchandise?
Mm-hmm.
And none of those are as easy, I guess, as just selling ad spaces.
Right. Yeah. And it all depends. Like, there are some larger organizations that have a historical following that can do things like shift to a paywall method and still stay afloat. There are others that cannot. Just as there are examples of companies that or individuals who exist on patronage. There's the site Patreon now, where you can pledge a certain amount per month for people who are doing things.
Mm-hmm. So, or crowdfunding, you know, the controversial Penny Arcade crowdfunder that basically let them run their site for a year.
For a year without ads, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there are other ways, but it's not necessarily something that's within the grasp of everyone. So,
oh, sure. You know, I think that the general recommendation is to, if you like a site, whitelist it and let it serve you ads.
Right. And so, yeah, I mean, this needs to be an ongoing conversation between users and advertisers and the companies that want to advertise, right? Because like I said, most companies are saying, we want people to be encouraged to buy our goods and services, or to at least have a more increased awareness of them. We would rather that increased awareness doesn't come along with, oh, those are those irritating so-and-sos that always block it whenever I want to watch such and such.
Right, right. I think it's really interesting that in all of this, Google, which is an ad company, don't ever think it's a search company,
no,
because that's not what they're there for. You know, they chose to allow ad blocking extensions for Chrome, for its browser. Speaking about that, Jonathan Rosenberg, the senior vice president of product management as of 2009, wrote in an in-company letter, that providing users with options can really only grow and enrich the internet community at large.
Yeah, it's a very interesting take. I mean, particularly from someone who, like you said, is working for essentially an ad company.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, they absolutely didn't have to do that. And I think it's pretty beautiful that they do. I have a quote, actually, from another Google employee, one Linus Upson, who, as of 2010, at least, was Google's engineering director, about this entire issue. He said, "It's unlikely ad blockers are going to get to the level where they imperil the advertising market, because if advertising is so annoying that a large segment of the population wants to block it, then advertising should get less annoying."
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that you know, the best way of going about this is to design ads that are that definitely advertise your product or service, but don't do so at the expense of the user experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, I mean, that's easy to say. It's really hard to do. Because
it is, but you know, I kind of appreciate that it's pushing the design impetus back to the people responsible for it. It's
right.
Saying, like, don't create bad stuff if
right.
you want people to not block it.
Yeah, don't go with the easy approach of using something that blocks their view of what they're trying to get at.
Or something that's so eye-catching that you literally can't pay attention to anything else on the page.
Right. If it looks like a MySpace page. Let's the old school MySpace, by the way, is
like
what I mean.
GeoCities.
That would have been a better way of putting it. Yeah. If it looks like a GeoCities page, you may want to revisit that, unless you're doing it specifically for the irony and it's going on a site that would fit in well. And that wraps up that classic episode of Tech Stuff. The things I wanted to say about ad blockers. So I used to be a big user of ad blockers, because a lot of ads were so intrusive, particularly the ones that would just launch with audio and video out of nowhere. And it was really disruptive, especially if you're someone who's doing a lot of research. You've got a lot of tabs open. Maybe you don't even know which tab is the one that's making the noise. I know that at least in Google Chrome, you can see the little megaphone icon that shows which one is playing noise, but when you've got like 20 tabs open, it's hard to even see that. So, you know, it was one of those things where because the ad experience was so bad, I didn't want to have to deal with it. However, that being said, I also these days feel like it's really giving the short end of the stick to the companies that are running the site or service that I'm on. You know, that's how they generate revenue. And if I'm denying that, then if you do enough people do that, then the stuff goes away, right? There's not enough money to support it. And as someone whose job depends upon ad revenue, I get it. I wish that ads could be less intrusive. And I've actually found some ads to be really helpful. I've followed some ads and I've bought stuff. Heck, I've bought stuff from other podcast ads, including some of my own. I've used my own discount code to buy stuff. So they do work, but yeah, I still don't like the disruptive ones. That ends up being something that sticks in my, you know, sticks under my skin, and I don't care for it. But I definitely understand the need for ads, and yeah, I don't use ad blockers anymore. Sometimes that ends up being a challenging situation, but at the end of the day, that was the choice I made. Not that I'm telling any of you guys how to choose to do things, just that it was something that I ultimately decided I would, you know, live in an ad-filled world because I want the stuff I like to keep going. All right, that's it.
If you guys have suggestions for future episodes of Tech Stuff, reach out to me. The best way to do that is over on Twitter, and the handle we use is TechStuffHSW. And I'll talk to you again really soon.
Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet. Finance smarter.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.